you're welcome. It's great to be back. If you're new and you don't remember, sorry about all these references to the past, but we're one of them as well. We were here for like 20 years, but moved away from Warwick 5 years ago to work in Southampton. So we've driven up from Southampton this morning, and it's just good to visit from time to time when people are I could say kind enough or crazy enough or whatever to invite me to come and speak on a Sunday morning. So it's nice to be here. Exciting to hear about your new building. Haven't seen it yet. We didn't come in that way. We might have a look round and peer through the fence. And also to hear about all these new developing community-based ministries, the pod and the Fun Day. Was it a Fun Day? Cedar was telling us about that. She popped into our church a couple of weeks ago when she was down visiting your granny, wasn't it, in Botley, which is a great little village near to Southampton. If ever you want somewhere to go for 10 minutes or so, it's a very nice place to be. Okay. Now, no, it is. You can walk around Botley. It is a very nice village. I don't know why I said that. Now, to get into this passage, it's in John chapter 13. I don't know whether you've got Bibles or not, but you don't have Bibles. Well, if you do, it's John 13. There's no point me telling you a page in the church Bible because there isn't one. So, but maybe you can look over someone else's or just listen as we look to it. But we need to kind of start by getting to the place where Jesus and the disciples are when Jesus says these words. It's a really key time in his life, and it's going to be in their life too. Hope this is working. Oh, all right, okay. I thought it was that one. Perhaps it's the other. Oh, okay. Now we've gone too far, but we'll keep that up. That's all right. It's the night that Jesus died. It's the last night he's going to be with his 12 disciples. You remember they've had the Last Supper. The whole evening got off to a rather difficult, uncomfortable, and somewhat embarrassing start, as there was nobody there to wash the feet, as was the custom when you had a meal in the Middle East, especially a meal of that nature. And you remember what happens in John 13? Nobody's going to do it. So Jesus gets up from where he was and takes off his outer garment and wraps himself in a servant's towel and washes their feet. And then there's a rather strange conversation that goes on where Jesus actually tells them that one of them is going to betray him that night. And then something else happens. As Jesus says a few words to Judas Iscariot, and tells him to get on with whatever he's going to be doing. And it's really quite difficult, really. What on earth is going on that night? You can read about it in John chapter 13. And then in verse 31, Jesus shares something really quite heavy, quite difficult with them. It's devastating news. Verse 31, when he was gone, that was when Judas had gone, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once." What's that about? Jesus is telling them that whatever's going to happen next, and what's going to happen next is going to be the most difficult thing they've ever experienced in their life and ever will do, that whatever is going to happen next, God is involved in it. God is going to be glorified in it. God is going to be glorified through Jesus. And there's a kind of reassurance. And in one sense, it's good news. But there's more, he goes on to. And the next bit is devastating news for the disciples. Because look at what he says in verse 33. "My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me. And just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come." How do you think those words would have impacted the disciples? This is the worst fear. Jesus is going, and they can't go where he's going. He's not going to be with them for a while, for quite a long time, not in the same way anyway. It's a hard thing for them to hear. And so through John 13 and 14 and 15 and 16 and 17, if you read it all through, you see that Jesus is kind of getting them ready for this devastating event. He's getting them ready for what it's going to be like after his death, after he has gone. It's a bit like a team talk. You know, before the match, you know, the team are going to have some tough times out there. What does the manager do? Sits them down and gives them a bit of a team talk. John 13 to 17, if you like, is Jesus' team talk to his disciples before they're going to go and face the toughest part of their lives ever, as it were. And what's the first big point of the team talk? Where does he start? Well, it's in verse 34. The first thing he says to them is, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I am going you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Notice Peter, like the rest of them, seems to just miss what Jesus is saying. You know, Jesus says, this is the thing, this is the first big point. You've got to, I want you to love one another. Peter says, let me just wind back, Jesus. You just said you were going. Where are you going? He hasn't quite got it. But Jesus is saying something really important to them. It's the first big thing about his talk, his team talk. And what he's really talking about is this priority. This isn't working, is it? Okay. If it's not working. It's this priority of loving one another. The priority. That's the first thing that I want us to get hold of today. The first thing he says, the first thing somebody says to you, especially on a team talk, is the most important thing, isn't it? Jesus is going to come back to it later. He also says it's a new commandment. Now, they were Jews. If you're a Jewish person, you'd know about commandments, wouldn't you? You'd know that the Ten Commandments were given because you were in relationship with God. You'll have known because you'd have said it probably every Saturday for most of your life. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me, blah, 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 blah. So the Ten Commandments flowed out of this relationship that the Israelites had with God as their rescuer and their deliverer. Jesus says, I'm going to rescue you. This is a new era. This is a new beginning. Something new is going to happen. And at the foundation of this new era is this commandment I'm giving to you. It's a key part of it. In the same way that the Ten Commandments were foundational, he says, this is a priority. It's really, really important. And what's it going to mean for these disciples? Well, we know what happens, don't we? They're under threat. They're under enormous pressure to run away. And in fact, they all do run away a little bit later in the Gospels. They come back together, though. The pressure when Jesus is taken from them to split is going to be enormous upon them. And Jesus is saying to them, look, guys, you need to stay together under threat. Under whatever's going to happen, your relationships with one another, the loving one another is a priority. It really, really matters. He's saying, you're my disciples. You're meant to be together. You're meant to be in relationship with one another. You're meant to be loving one another. That matters. Followers of Jesus are meant to be together. It's not to be broken lightly. Do you agree with that? What Jesus says. And I don't know what threats you might be under. None of us are under the kind of threat that the disciples were under. But all kinds of things can threaten us, can threaten our life together, can be, you know, give us a real pressure, a temptation to kind of disregard the relationships and kind of get off out of here kind of thing. You know, you're under a bit of uncertainty with your building. You're a little bit homeless, I gather, at the moment. That's about all I do know. I don't know a lot about where you're at. But, you know, at any time, in any Christian community, there's the threat of misunderstandings. There's always the threat of people that you might not like too much or you might find difficult. There can be disappointments. There can be hard things that are said. There can be disagreements. And there can be all kinds of threats upon us. And what Jesus is saying is our priority to love one another means that we need to kind of be in relationship with brothers and sisters as a priority. Relationships with brothers and sisters matter. That's the first thing. the priority of loving one another. Do we get that? Do we get that in our fellowship in Portswood, in Southampton? It's really, really crucial that we do. Jesus goes on to explain to them a bit about what he means by this commandment. Okay, what's new about it? He says it's a new commandment. I suppose in one sense he's saying it's a new era, so there's a new commandment. But the old one talked about love, didn't it? What was the root of the old commandment? Love the Lord your God and your neighbour as yourself. That was all about love. This one is also about love, but what's new about it is the way. The way we're to love one another. That's the second thing. You know, we've already seen in John 13 how Jesus loved them. It says if you turn up John 13 verse 1, John introduces what happened with the washing of the disciples' feet. He says in verse 1, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. He showed them what it looked like to love them. He washes their feet as a sign of giving himself up for them. And Jesus says to them, as I have loved you, this is how we're to love one another. As I have loved you. So how has Jesus loved us? He's given up everything for us, hasn't he? He served us. How did he love us? He didn't hold on to his status as the main thing. He let it go. Philippians 2 is an amazing commentary on that. He emptied himself, says Paul in Philippians. He's been patient with us. He's been kind with us. He's loved us, as Ron reminded us, without conditions. He's accepted us with all of our faults, whatever they may be, to get nothing back. Years ago, American Bible teacher Bill Hybels coined this phrase, love of another kind. It's a different kind of love. It's Jesus' kind of love. It's completely different to the world around. It's a love that doesn't, you know, have me at the center of everything. It's a love that puts others first. A love like Jesus. That's what's new. That's what's new about it. Nobody'd really seen that kind of love until Jesus came into the world. And that's how we're to love one another. So can I ask you, in this community, do we love one another like that? Do we do that in our community in Portswood? Do we love one another like that? I once told them down there a story that comes from, it's a true story, when I was a teenager in a church in the south, we had a bit of issues. I won't tell you what happened, but it was a bit of a difficult thing. And some of us, three of us, four of us in the youth group, all guys, we were about 16 or 17. Well, I will tell you what happened. We'd watched a huge conflict, which nearly involved a punch-up. Between two of the elders of this church, it wasn't very good, and it wasn't a very good thing to see. And we, as three or four teenagers, we were kind of outraged, rightly, about that. And so we talked to somebody else, and we were kind of saying, you know, for justice and vengeance, and what are you going to do about it, kind of thing. We knew that we were in the right on that one. And we talked to somebody who read us 1 Corinthians 13. And you know, 1 Corinthians 13, very famous, you know that phrase, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth, it always protects, it always trusts, it always hopes, it always perseveres. And the guy we talked to was a young leader, no, he was in his mid to late 20s, a bit older and more mature and wiser than us. He read this verse and he put our names where it says love. He says, John is patient. Martin is kind. Tim does not boast. And he put our names into there and he said, guys, you know, bit of love here. We'll sort it out. Don't worry. You know, abandon the lynch mob, trust us. But the thing was, it was very challenging. Love. Love of another kind. Read those verses sometime. Put your name in it. Going to be like that? That's Jesus' way. So Jesus gives us a way that we can love one another. But he also gives us the reason. Are we over? Oh. The reason why. I'm not used to this. In our, sorry, I shouldn't boast about our church. Maybe you'll have one in your church. We've got a kind of plasma screen on the wall there, you see. So when you're speaking, you can see what's on there. It's very, very handy. Perhaps you could get one next time I come. If you'll see that. But no. Keep looking back. It'll be about a year before I'm back anyway, if I'm lucky. And if you're lucky. Number three. The reason why we love one another. Jesus tells them. He says, look, I've loved you, you see. And he says to them, love one another as I have loved you. It's not just the way we're to love. It's the reason why we love. We're there, aren't we? We're loved by Jesus. And so we love one another. And the New Testament often reminds us of this, doesn't it? We love, says John in his letter, 1 John 4. Why? Because he first loved us. That's why we love. Because we've been loved. Romans 15, verse 7 says, accept one another as Christ has accepted you. Accept one another. Why should I accept you? Why should I accept you? I might not even like you. Why should you accept me? You might not like me. Now I'm a soft southerner and all of that kind of stuff. Well, because God has accepted me and God has accepted you, so we accept one another. That's why. There's a good reason for it. It's the same in Ephesians 4, verse 32, in the area of forgiveness. Ephesians 4, verse 32. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other. Just as in Christ, God forgave you. Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. We've been loved, so we love one another. That's the reason for it, as well as the way we're to do it. We've received so much from God, haven't we? So it's so sad when we're so mean ourselves, when I'm so mean. I've been forgiven so much. So isn't it sad that if I won't forgive or if I hold grudges? But you see, we've been loved, so we can love. We've been loved by God. But it will make a difference if we love one another the Jesus way. Moving on, sorry. Let's look at the results, fourthly, of us loving one another. What are they? All people will know. By this, says Jesus, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. The emphasis there is, Jesus is saying, look, everyone will know that you're my disciples, as apart from some other rabbi's disciples, if you love in the way that I love. Jesus is saying, you'll be identified with me, says Jesus, if people see this love in you. People will see Jesus in the way we love. And now, love is the priority. Our relationships matter. There's a way to love, there's a reason to love, but there's always this outward focus as well, isn't there? We're meant to be seen, we're meant to be a community that's loving the Jesus way, because that kind of community, as one person has said, makes a kind of a home for the gospel, the good news. How do people understand and know and see and grasp what the good news is about? Well, they see it in a loving community. That's how people get God's love, is if they see it lived out in our community as believers. That's the key. Obviously, they need to have access into our community if they're going to see that. So we need to be open. You know, you do stuff in the community, do all those things. And I trust that when the new building's open, you'll have a great opportunity for more people to be part of what you do. But we've got a whole load of networks and relationships all over the place. But the key thing is, if we preach a gospel of forgiveness and grace and acceptance and love from God, and in the community where this gospel is supposed to have its home, you know, you can't see a sign of it in the way that we treat one another, what's the good of that? you like this kind of, you know, heavy-duty language, a missiologist called Leslie Newbegin, whose books I would highly recommend in all kinds of ways, talked about the church, the community of God, being the hermeneutic for the gospel. Hermeneutics means interpreting, understanding. How do you understand what the gospel is? You see it lived out in the community of believers. That's us. In this local church. You know, don't just think, well, it's about all the believers in Warwick. Yeah, it is all about all the believers in Warwick, but you know, today it's about us here in this community, isn't it? How do we live that out? That's the result of us loving one another. And you know, that happened. It happened in the early church. So how the early church worked. Listen to the words of a man called Tertullian. He writes towards the end of the second century. He's writing about the Christian community. This is what he says. If he likes, each puts in a small donation, talking about giving money, but only if he wants to, and only if he is able. There is no compulsion, all is voluntary. These gifts are to support and bury poor people, to supply the wants of needy boys and girls without parents, and of housebound old people. People say, see how they love one another. That's what people were saying at that time. One in heart and soul, we do not hesitate to share our earthly goods with one another. We have all things in common, he said, except our wives. That's what Tertullian said. Justin Martyr, about 50 years earlier, someone else writing, he wrote a letter to the emperor in Rome about the Christian community and about how it worked. He said this, we used to value getting wealth and possessions above all things, but now we bring what we have to a common fund and share with everyone in need. We used to hate and destroy one another, and we used to be racists. But now, since the coming of Christ, we live in harmony with others of different races and pray for our enemies. That's what the church did in those days. The priority of loving one another, the way we love one another, the reason we love one another, and the results of us loving one another. But you know, that is quite a tough call. It's not easy, is it? How can we do that? How can we do it? I wonder just briefly, for the last 5 minutes or so, see how Jesus takes these truths and develops them in the team talk, because he comes back to them. And the first place is in John 15, and it's in verse 9. If you've got it, you can show it up, or else you can just listen to it. Listen to what Jesus says. See if you can spot or pick out how he's building on what he's already said. Verse 9 of chapter 15. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. What's Jesus bringing extra, as it were? You know, I think he had to do this because already after he'd hardly spoken the words about loving one another when Peter had already changed the subject, as we saw, and was talking about why he's going and where he's going. And he answers these questions and he comes back to love again here in John 15. Because it's all part of one long conversation, John 13 to 17. It's all one piece of talk. Jesus tells them, look, you're part of something bigger as you love one another. He says, as the Father has loved me, I've loved you. Now you remain in that love. He says, if you obey me, you remain in God's love. Just as he says, I've remained in my Father's love. It's an amazing thing. He says, look, and again he says, love each other as I have loved you. So as we love one another, we're not just kind of doing good things. It's coming out of Jesus' love for us. And that love for us is kind of coming out of the love of the Father to the Son. And then the disciples, we're kind of caught up in something, not, you know, it's huge. We're caught up in somehow in the relationship of Jesus to God and Jesus to us. We're kind of in that kind of loving kind of dynamic circle, if you like. We're connected to the love of God. And I think that's a big help as we struggle. How do we love one another? Well, God's love is at work in us. It's not just something we do. It's something he does through us. Jesus also tells them, if I can put it this way, he says, look, you can remain in my love. The word in the old version was abide. It means to live. Jesus is saying, look, you can kind of hang out in God's love. You can kind of make your home there. You could be at home in God's love, and that kind of helps you to love other people, as it were. And I think it's true, as we're kind of at home in God's love for us, we know how much God's loved us, if we're aware of that, if we're enjoying that, if we're kind of hanging out, as it were, in God's love, then we're going to continue in it, and I can be obedient to God as I love other believers. And maybe a prayer we could pray is, I should pray it anyway. Lord, help me to be at home in your love for me. Help me to really hang out there. Help me to know that that's the place where I belong, so that I can be obedient to you, Lord, as I love my brothers and sisters. And as before, did you notice there's an outcome? Just as Jesus said to them, if you love one another, there's an outcome. Everyone will know your disciples. What's the outcome here? If you love one another, my joy will be in you and your joy will be full. Loving each other, being obedient to Jesus, brings joy into our lives. Do you believe that? Yeah, we could look like it, I think. It is hard. But being joyful comes out of being obedient. And it's not just any old joy, it's Jesus' joy, because as we shall see, he's at home in us. So it is tough. But remember, we're part of something big. We can hang out in his love. And there's that kind of great incentive of Jesus' joy to drive us. But I wanted to go on to another passage where Jesus finally wraps up this whole whole evening's talk, or hour's talk that he's had with them, in John 17, verse 20. Jesus ends the team talk with a prayer. And these disciples have the amazing privilege of overhearing Jesus pray to his Father. I mean, that is an astonishing thing. John 17 is an amazing passage in that way. And in a number of ways, well, let's read it, John 17. Because he goes on to pray for those people who will believe. That's us. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity, to let the world know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Verse 25. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known, in order that the love you have for me may be in them, and that I may myself may be in them. Now, there's a lot we could say about this prayer. People have written masses of, you know, what is this prayer all about? Well, I just want to finish with this, and I'm just going to make one or two simple, very simple points, really. Jesus prays, doesn't he, that they may be one. There it is. What does that mean? Does it mean that they agree on everything? Does it mean that they're all the same kind of people, from the same social class or the same race, the same background, or even enjoy the same style of worship? Is that what it means? Does it mean that it's some kind of Christian unity where they have joint services? Well, that's not a bad thing to do. None of those other things, that's not a bad thing at all. But what does verse 21 actually say? Jesus prays, verse 21, may they also be in us. May they be in us. Jesus is saying, I want these disciples to be connected to us, Jesus praying to his Father. I want them to know God's life in them, and I want their connection to be through God and through that shared life of God among them and in their relationships one with another. God's presence in us. And what's the outcome of that? There's an outcome there too. So that the world may know that you've sent me. That's the outcome. Always there's this outward focus. And he says, I want the world to know that you have loved them, God. He's saying, God, I want the world to know that, God, you've loved these disciples just in the same way that you have loved me. Jesus is saying, as they share your life, I want the world to see how much these people are loved by you, God. I want the world to see that, because it's there, it's in their lives, it's in their relationships, it's how they were. And again, you think, whoa, that's hard. Phew, how do we do that? Well, look at verse 26, because Jesus makes a really interesting ongoing commitment in verse 26. What does he say to them, or to God rather, in their hearing? I have made you known to them. And don't forget, he's praying for all those who believe as well. And then he says, and I will continue to make you known to them. What's the outcome? In order that the love you have for me may be in them, and that I myself will be in them. Jesus says, I am committed, God, to make you known, just as I've made you known already in the every generation of disciples, a community that knows you and loves you and shares your love. I'm going to make you known. And hold on to this, because he says, as I make you known to them, the love that you have for me will be in them, and I will be, says Jesus, in them. That's just the basic point, really. So that means then, have I got everywhere? Yes. That in this network of relationships that go up to make up a kind of fabric of a community of God's people, in a local church, in that bunch of people loving each other, sticking with one another, loving each other the Jesus way, in that place, says Jesus, I live. There, Jesus says, I'm going to be at home. I'm going to be making God known to them, pouring out God's love into our hearts. Romans 5 says, God's love is poured into our hearts by the Holy Spirit who he's given us. And that's a powerful place to be. It's a great place to be. It's a tough place to be. It's a challenging place to be. But it's where Jesus lives, in these relationships of love one for another. So our relationships, our love for one another, there's this priority of love, as we've seen. There's a way to love. There's a reason for love. There's a result of this love. And there's this ongoing promise that we can be at home in that love. And there's this ongoing commitment of Jesus to make God known, and that love will be known in us, through us, in our community, in our relationships. So our relationships, our love for one another, this community of believers, it's really important. It really matters to Jesus. It's being in a Christian community of loving relationships, it's not some added extra to your Christian life. It's absolutely fundamental. And that's why when there's a strain in relationships, or when things don't go as easily as we'd like, or when people leave, or when relationships in a Christian community are not honoured, or whatever, it's really, really hard. It really hurts. And the reason it hurts actually points us to the reality of the love, doesn't it? Some of us may be hurting a bit. Don't know quite what to do with it. Well, what do we do with it? Well, we need to realize that the reason we're hurting is because we really do love this. We do know this kind of love among us. So what do we do? Well, all we can do is commit to keep loving each other. Commit to being the kind of place where the gospel is seen, where the gospel is at home, where people who come into it just see it lived out and think, yeah, I get the love of God. I see it here with these people. Where the love of Christ is in us together, and where God is known because Christ is in us. And we keep holding that out to a needy world. We keep welcoming people into our community because they need what God has given us. We need to know it better. I talk about us in our church in Southampton. We need to know this. This idea of the gospel being the church community being the home of the gospel. I was preaching on it last week. It's why we do loving works in community. where we reach out in these practical ways so that people will kind of get the love of God because they see it in the time you spend with them or whatever it is you do. So please don't think I'm just saying this to you. It's something that speaks to me very much as well. The priority of love, that's what Jesus said. So let's just know real joy, shall we, as we know the kind of thrill of doing what Jesus wants us to do, no matter how hard it can be sometimes. Not always. It's easy to make it sound like it's terrible. It's not that difficult once you start. Just keep going. And know God's love, know his joy, for his glory. Amen. Wrong back? I haven't gone too long. I didn't know what time you finished. So
we don't have time.
There we are.
Thank you, John.